Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome into Soccer Morning Live, worldsoccertalk.com. Got your coffee, your donuts. Are soccer people donut people? I'm hearing a lot about donuts. I've been listening to podcasts and a lot of people talking about donuts. And I know there's like boutique donut places. Doesn't Portland have a famous donut place? Voodoo Donuts or something? I haven't made it out to Portland yet, so I haven't had any other donuts. But there's like donut spots everywhere. Donuts is, we have the cupcake fad and we have a donut thing happening. I don't have any donuts. I need to get a, can we get a sponsorship with donuts on this show? I feel like, well, that probably wouldn't be good for my health. I mean, donuts are awesome, but they're not good for you. Yeah, Cronuts. Can I get some Cronuts on this program? Again, happy Monday. Welcome into Soccer Morning. Today is a big, big day. Obviously, it's a little earlier than we're usually on at worldsoccertalk.com/live because we have the Sirius XM show debuting today at 11 a.m. Eastern, Sirius XM FC, Channel 94. If you have Sirius XM, you should be listening. That would help us out a lot. And get ready to call because I might need your help on that front as well. We are going to have a very good show here, but why don't I outline what's going to happen on Sirius XM FC 94 today so you'll know whether or not you want to listen. Obviously, I'll be there. It'll be great. We're also going to have Jesse Marsh, Kyle McCarthy, Benny Failhaber, and Alex Morgan. So I think that's pretty loaded for a first show on Sirius XM FC. I think that's a little loaded. Good stuff coming to you on the satellite show. But we're not going to shortchange you here on the web show. Luke Moore, the world-famous football ramble, will join us in 10 minutes to talk about the Premier League weekend. Chelsea, obviously the big story, winning the Premier League title, locking it down. That question, that looming question, whether or not Chelsea is a boring team, whether or not they won this title in any sort of real style, we'll bring that up with Luke. Maybe you're tired of it, but I do think that the question of whether or not you want to win and do it in a pedestrian fashion, or you want to lose and play wonderful soccer, is at the heart of so much of what we care about with this sport. We can't just talk about winning or losing. We have to talk about winning, losing, and how those things are achieved or not achieved, whatever the case may be. So I'm looking forward to that discussion with Luke in a couple of minutes. Let's hit those headlines pretty hard right off the bat. Chelsea beating Crystal Palace 1-0 to win the Premier League title. First title in 5 years. Jose Mourinho's return to the pinnacle of the Premier League. His comments after the match, post-game press conference, just so Jose. The most Jose you could get. Talk about how tired he is. He's so tired, guys. Winning titles is tiring. He also talked, you know, he also is obviously hitting out at those people who say Chelsea didn't win with any style. He indicated that he'll be there at Chelsea for as long as Mr. Abramovich wants him there. Now, that wasn't the case last time around when he left. But he has come back and he has won a title. Do we have a precedent for this? Do we have a precedent for a manager having success at a club, winning things, moving on, having success elsewhere, and then coming back and winning more titles? I don't know if that's ever happened before. At the same club. Maybe there's an Italian precedent for it. I'm not sure there's an English precedent for it. Apologies for my lack of historical knowledge if it is out there. Hit us up on Twitter, at Soccer Morning, if I'm missing somebody. But it just feels like this is a pretty unique situation. Whether you like Jose Mourinho or not, you cannot throw shade on the man for his success. He wins. He wins things. Trophies end up on his mantle. In MLS action, Seattle beat New York City FC 2-1. Clint Dempsey, Obafemi Martins are so damn fun to watch. Clint Dempsey with a back heel through ball to Martins, which was finished in style. They are, if not the best team in MLS, certainly in the conversation as it exists right now. New England, also in that conversation. They take down the New York Red Bulls. Again, Jesse Marsh on the Sirius XM show coming up, so you want to listen to that. The New York Red Bulls' first loss on the year. They sit in third place in the East. You think, okay, well, they haven't lost yet. They must be one or two. Well, no, they are third place in the Eastern Conference. Now, that is partly due to the fact the Revs have actually played one more game. But both the Revolution and DC United have better point per game totals than the New York Red Bulls. Rebels have four draws on the year. So even though they only have that one loss, They've only got 3 wins, and that puts them in third place. It's going to be, I think the Eastern Conference can be really fun. I think this is going to be a good race. Right now, your top six, meaning your teams in the playoff spots, New England, D.C., New York, Columbus, Toronto, and Chicago. Orlando City can't score a goal, can't buy a goal, and now without Kevin Molino. Midfielder Kevin Molino, who came up with this team from USL, was signed to the MLS roster, and has been a regular contributor for them, tore his ACL and is now out for the year. He did that in a friendly. And I don't have time now. We're going to get to Luke Moore. I don't have time to rant about friendlies, but you know how I feel about these midseason friendlies for MLS teams. Now, other teams in other leagues around the world do this occasionally. But I don't know why you put your players in the jeopardy. And somebody, I've had people tell me, oh, this could happen in training. This could happen in any other match. It could happen in a league match. Of course it could happen in a league match, but at least that matters for the standings. And of course it could happen in training, but the intensity is not going to be there. A friendly shouldn't have that sort of intensity, but you never know, especially when you play another team with players who are attempting to make their own name. Go in a little hard. Get a little bit of that red mist. Next thing you know, I haven't seen the incident with Kevin Molino. I don't know how he did this. It could be non-contact. It just is troubling when a player is injured in a game that meant nothing. Also in MLS, RSL drew with San Jose. Controversial game for a couple of reasons, but mostly because of the refereeing and the question of whether or not Chris Wondolowski was offside when he scored San Jose's goal. I think he was. I don't know how you would make an argument that he's not. Kyle Beckerman after the match saying that refereeing can hold MLS back and this needs to be fixed. This is a consistent refrain when it comes to this league. I don't know. Are we making progress? Does anybody feel like we're making progress on the refereeing front in MLS? Because Kyle Beckerman is exactly right. When you have issues with refereeing, it distracts from what's going on the field. Now, that game in particular wasn't that great. RSL didn't manage a shot on goal. They needed a Victor Bernardes own goal to get that draw at home against a team that you would expect them, you know, all things being equal, to beat at home. And RSL can't get their attack going right now. It's starting to get a little dicey out on the Wasatch front. Jeff Cassar's got to figure some things out. They are missing some players, clearly. And when you don't have Joao Plata, and he was so key to their success last year, it's going to be tougher. But you've got enough talent in this team to create some chances, and they're just not doing it. In France, PSG beat Alejandro Bedoya and Nantes to move back up to the top of Ligue 1. They're now 3 points clear of Lyon in France. Zlatan and company looking to return, or looking to win a second title in a row. Or is it be the third one? I can't keep track. I think they're on their second, right? Whatever it is. Obviously, PSG, the most the richest team in France, bowing out of the Champions League, but still has an opportunity to win another domestic title. All right, let's take a break. Remember, SiriusXM FC 94 at 11 o'clock. I'm going to hit it because it's a big day. It's the first day. When we come back, Luke Moore, world-famous football ramble. Let's talk some Premier League. Chelsea winning a title. Van Persie missing penalties. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. You're talking too loud.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning talking some Premier League, well, some English football. We may range outside of the Premier League. Luke Moore from the Football Ramble is on the line. It's been a little while. It's good to have you back, Luke.
It's great to be back, Jason. Thank you for inviting me back on. It has been a while. I wondered if it was something I'd say.
No, certainly not. The last time we talked, I'm sure this happened. Memory can get fuzzy, but I think the last time you and I talked, we were consistently going over the inevitability of Chelsea winning the Premier League title, and here we are. It has finally happened. They have locked this up. They win against Crystal Palace, and everybody celebrates, and it's great. I saw interviews with with Cesc Fabregas and Didier Drogba, who you know, obviously has a lot of history with that club and gets another title. The question I think that a lot of people are asking is whether or not Chelsea is, whether or not they're an entertaining team and whether or not this is a championship one in, or a title one in style. Is that a real issue for anybody, you know, outside of the people who don't like Chelsea?
I think it depends how you look at the game in general. I mean, I tend to look at the game as an entertaining pastime that I enjoy being involved in terms of watching. And it depends whether you adopt that sort of winning at all cost mentality. But I mean, it's impossible for any team to pipe up about Chelsea not being entertaining without it sounding like sour grapes. I mean, so you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, really. Chelsea started off this season being pretty entertaining. I mean, there's no question about that. They had a massive win at Goodison Park early on. I mean, if we go back to sort of more recently, they beat Hull 3-2 sort of at the back end of March. So, and they've scored, you know, a decent amount of goals. I mean, I think only Man City have scored more than them. So they've scored goals. And obviously they've not conceded that many either. They've got the best defence in the league. So, I mean, whichever way you slice it, Chelsea are the best team in this division. They deserve to win, and they've been top pretty much since day one, really. So I don't know if I buy into it too much. I mean, it depends what you determined to be entertaining. I mean, a lot of people like watching defensive football and think that defending is hard and is a part of the game as much as scoring goals. So really, it really is down to opinion, but I don't think it can sound like anything other than sour grapes when a club or a team who are maybe not doing quite as well as them complain about it, whether it's entertaining or not. Well, I mean, essentially, Jose Mourinho will be judged on titles, won't he?
Yeah, and I think so much of this is about Jose Mourinho and about certainly his reputation, the type of football that he is inclined to play, especially when things get tight, when he needs points. He is a sort of a master of reactive football in that sense. And so this
But we go back to the Arsenal game. This all reared its ugly head around the Arsenal game. Okay, where they drew 0-0 and they celebrated at a decent point because they knew really that was that for the title for them. Now, what I mean, I don't want to defend or Chelsea or Arsenal. I don't really have any vested interest in either of these sides. But what do we expect Chelsea to do?
Right.
I mean, Arsenal are well known for their expansive, sort of free flowing attacking football with little tricky players who will tear you to pieces if you let them. You can't seriously suggest that a Chelsea side that has built more around strength and athleticism and different disciplines to what Arsenal are known for should just let themselves be carved open. They set out a way to get the point they needed to win to essentially win the title. I don't really care too much that I didn't personally find that entertaining, because actually that game wasn't too bad. It was quite an interesting game. It wasn't like a real drudge fest that we've seen in the past in some of these games between big teams in the Premier League. So I just think, it's like I say, it's a bit sour grapes. It's a little bit reductive. Ultimately, Chelsea should be applauded for winning the title and winning it well, and then that's what we should be focusing on.
Right. And as you said, it's not as though this has been their character for the entire season, and I think that speaks to Mourinho's skill as a manager. He has managed to he's taken his team and they played a certain way for a while, and that worked. That was great. They had things changed a little bit. Certainly, the season got long. You have fatigue and injuries, and you have Champions League, and you have all of these things on different fronts. And here they are. They're and as you said, they've scored 69 goals in 35 matches. That's nearly 2 goals a game. Only Manchester City has scored more than them. They have the best goal differential in the league. They are certainly worthy champions, and all of this other stuff is just a bunch of noise.
I agree, yeah. I mean, look, you can say that Man City have arguably been more entertaining than Chelsea, but Man City have lost 5 more games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's 15 points you don't get. They lost to Man United pretty handily. They lost to Burnley. They lost to Liverpool. I mean, Chelsea haven't really been reduced to consistent defeats, and that's why they're going to win. That's why they've won the Premier League. They've lost 2 games all season. I just don't really buy it. I think that, you know, it's not like they've set out to win every game 1-0 and draw every game that's away from home and hard 0-0. I mean, they've scored 69 goals. I mean, they've essentially scored 2 goals a game on average all season. Mm-hmm. It's not dreadful.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, certainly not. Some other results for this weekend, interesting results. Manchester United losing to West Brom. Robin van Persie with not a great penalty, a penalty saved, and the talk after the match is Lee Van Gaal is going to take away that responsibility from Van Persie. I mean, that seems like, I don't know. I don't know if that's a big deal necessarily, Luke, but certainly for Manchester United to lose to West Brom after building some momentum, after looking, you know, pretty solid to sort of just walk into a top four spot. And they probably still will hold on to a top four spot with Liverpool 4 points back. But they, I don't know, it's not the way you want to play when you're trying to recapture some of that old Trafford magic.
No, they went gone for a bit of a funny spell. They lost three in a row now in the league, which is the first time for ages, I think. And they weren't great against West Brom. The Van Persie point I take, I think that overall United at penalties recently have been pretty poor. I think I'm right to say Wayne Rooney's record at scoring Premier League penalties is quite poor as well. Yeah. I actually think Van Persie would be moved on in the summer anyway. But yeah, as you say, they'll probably finish in the top four. I mean, they're 4 points between them and Liverpool. I mean, the games they play next, you would fancy them really to do okay. I mean, they play Crystal Palace and they play Hull, I think, and the game they've got home to Arsenal is possibly more tricky, but ultimately they're going to finish in the top four, which is a great improvement on what happened last season. And I imagine Van Hull will strengthen again in the summer, move out a few players, like I say, like Van Persie will probably be one of them, and again strengthen. But I mean, you know, I mean, it's a poor result at home to West Brom. I think it happened last season as well. So it's funny because they went on a run of like six games being one a row at a really key time before that. And now they've just been caught a little bit. I think they lost to Chelsea, who are obviously champions. They were outclassed by Everton. And now this result against West Brom, which was poor. But overall, their objective really was probably going to be top four. And it looks like they're going to achieve that.
A bunch of these teams outside of Chelsea, very Jekyll and Hyde, or at least a little bit of that. And certainly Liverpool's been that way this season. They get a win against QPR, sad sack QPR. Steven Gerrard scores there, and so much of the talk recently about Liverpool, especially with Jurgen Klopp hovering around everything, is whether or not Brendan Rodgers should be moved on. I'm not saying Jurgen Klopp would take that job necessarily, Luke, but there's obviously some pressure on Brendan Rodgers. Is that fair? Is considering how well they did last year and how close they came, is it fair to say that Brendan Rodgers may not be good enough for Liverpool at this point?
That's a tough question because it depends which way you look at it. I mean, I think he's the first manager since Shankly to do three seasons without winning a trophy.
Yes.
In his first three, a manager to not win a trophy in his first three seasons at Liverpool. They're a massive club. I mean, everyone knows how big they are as a team. They need to be successful. They need sustained success for the size of club they are. People will also point to Rodgers being a bit hit and miss in the transfer market, perhaps coming undone a little bit against other good teams when it really matters. Their Champions League campaign this season was disappointing. And they are clearly going to finish nowhere near where they finished last season. But on the other hand, they've lost important players. They've had injuries at key times. And it's all round, I would suggest, been a more competitive Premier League this season. They also have Real Madrid in their Champions League group. So, I mean, it's difficult to say. I think it depends how they want to approach it as a club. Do they want to say, right, this guy, you know, Klopp is available. He wants to come to Liverpool. I mean, that may or may not be the case, but say he does. Do they see him as an upgrade on Rodgers? If they do, they should probably go and get him because, we just said earlier about Chelsea, the game is about winning. Or do they say, look, we've invested 3 years in Brendan Rodgers so far. We're happy with the way things are going. We look for him to kick on again next season and see what he can achieve next year. I mean, I think really he's been undone a little bit when it really counts around Steven Gerrard. I think in the FA Cup, especially, there's been too many sentimental selections of Steven Gerrard because it's his last season. I mean, if you want to offer some sort of thanks to Steven Gerrard for his service to the club, then by all means, send him up to collect the FA Cup trophy when they win it. Don't play him when he's not up to it and get beat in the semi-final. I mean, that's just a ridiculously sentimental mistake to make. And they've ultimately paid the price for that. So I think he's been a bit silly in transfers and a little bit silly with Steven Gerrard. But I understand it's a difficult situation. I mean, the guy is almost bigger than him at the club, which is not an easy situation when you're the manager. So it's been tough for them. It's a more competitive league. They had a terrible start. If they'd have started better, they probably would be in the top four. I mean, they've been okay since then, really. But their start was just so poor. I think it might have been their worst start since the Premier League started. So that obviously wasn't a great way to get up and running. Yeah. But I think there are positives to draw. And I think if he can pull out a couple of transfers in the summer that are going to be successful, which he's not really done consistently so far, it may save him his job, but I don't really know.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes, you know, the bigger the club, especially if they take a dip, and clearly Liverpool took a dip for a little while, they kind of claw their way back into a discussion of whether or not they can win a title or make Champions League places, and they did that last year. then the question becomes, okay, what's our aspirations? Do we view ourselves as so big that we should be winning trophies? And when you don't have any trophies, you know, on the mantle, then that is going to be pressure whether or not Brendan Rodgers is still evolving and a good enough manager to get them, you know, above where they were, but not where they expect to be.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Yeah. I think it all comes down to whether they think Rodgers can really move on to the next level with Liverpool.
Right.
Because their ambitions are big.
Absolutely. So are Manchester City's. And they have failed to meet those expectations this year, a year after winning a title. And Manuel Pellegrini may be a guy who's not long for this league either.
Yeah, I think he'll probably go. 13 points behind the league title. I mean, it's not really that great. They won it last season. They've gone backwards this year. I think there's a lot of players in that squad resting on their laurels. I don't think they're working hard enough, personally. It's easy for me to say, sat on the sofa, but, I mean, they're professional athletes. They should be working a lot harder. They're not doing that, and that's why they've come up way, way short, not just in the domestic league, but, of course, in Europe as well. And ultimately, City, at some point, need to get over this hump in Europe. They need to sort it out. They need to get a manager who can deliver the latter stages at the very least of the Champions League. And that's why they brought Pellegrini in, because of his work at Villarreal. Mm-hmm. It's not worked. It's not transferred across. So I think they need to have another look. And I don't think there's much chance he'll be there next season, because I don't think he can outperform Mourinho. And of course, there are not many managers that can.
No.
But he certainly can't. Mm. And they need to find one that possibly can.
Let's look down the table here. I've right now, Sunderland, QPR, and Burnley in the relegation places, in Newcastle only 2 points ahead of Sunderland and 15th, so possible that they could be pulled down. And, you know, John Carver's a guy that American soccer fans know a little bit from his time. Well, North American soccer fans know from a little bit from his time at Toronto FC, and he's clearly a Newcastle man, but that's a guy that I can't imagine sticking around. I'm a little surprised he's still there as of today. And I know that they've already gone through a change with Pardew leaving. Is Newcastle's future bleak from your perspective? Not much time to salvage this, and they could be pulled down.
Yeah, it is bleak. I mean, it's difficult to know where they go from here, really. I mean, the way that Mike Ashley is running the club is a cause of a great sort of existential crisis for Newcastle fans, and understandably so. Is it really John Carver's fault? I mean, he's supposed to be inspiring the players, but...
Sure.
He's not really doing that. But his players are completely mugging him off, in my opinion, as well. I mean, the amount of times Carver says things like, "Oh, when I love this club, and when I'm in charge, none of these players are going to turn up to a game and are going to want for effort and things like that." But you just look at it and you think these players are supposed to be going into battle. I mean, they're in free fall. The only thing that's going to keep them in the Premier League this season is three other teams being worse than them, not because they deserve to stay up, and they're going into battle. And you look at the other teams and think these other teams are groups of players are up for it. You know, it's like Newcastle are going into a war armed with a little teaspoon. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing there. There's no fight. There's nothing for them. And then to do what they did with Mike Williamson and Jan Mat in the game at the weekend, which is basically the coward's way out. Didn't fancy it. Williamson knew he'd get a couple of games off because he'd be suspended. Just coward's way out. Doesn't want to fight. And ultimately, the manager is going to pay for that with his job. But if he's not really up to it in the first place and the players aren't trying, I mean, is it really his fault? It's difficult to say.
Yeah, with Carver actually speaking out and suggesting that Williamson got himself ejected on purpose, that's the kind of thing. I mean, whether or not it's true, I think, is beyond the point. I put this on Carver. You can't have that in public. You have to do that behind closed doors if you are going to make that.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Yeah, I think he did do it on purpose. But whether, as you say, Carver should have said that in public is probably a different point, and I would agree with you there, Alex.
Because you cannot, you certainly can, I don't think you can mend that rift. Certainly not with the limited number of games you have left in an attempt to maintain your position in the Premier League. You can't heal that rift, and there's certainly going to be players who are going to take Williamson's side. Hey, you shouldn't call him out like that. Whether Williamson did it on purpose or not, you can't call him out like that. That's not how you manage players. I mean, and so much of this game in the modern day is you know, it's not just about formation and tactics. It's about managing the players day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. I mean, and it also smacks a little bit of Carver trying to sort of shift the blame a little
bit.
And saying, look what I've got to deal with here. Look at the situation. Look how crazy it is. Rather than potentially having his own failings being focused on. I think, saying it in public is probably a little bit self-defeating. But I mean, Have they really got anything to lose at this point? I mean, he's probably tried everything else. So if he publicly shamed the player, and he's the type of player that will bounce back and really use it as motivation to prove someone wrong, then maybe it's the right thing to do. But it looks to me like a little bit desperate, for sure.
Meanwhile, Leicester, who defeated Newcastle United 3-0 this weekend, do they look like, for you, do they look like a team that's going to be able to keep themselves up? Because there was, most of the season, it seemed very much like the Foxes were going back down.
Yeah, I mean, they can do it. Yeah, I mean, they've got two more winnable home games. So home to Southampton, which they can win. I mean, Southampton are a good team, but they're not unbeatable. And they're at home to QPR, who will already be relegated on the last day of the season. So they can get 6 points. I mean, the other game is away to Leicester, which is away to Sunderland, which is a massive 6-pointer.
Right.
If they can get a point at Sunderland, and they can win their two home games with the momentum and the confidence they've got, so of course they can stay up. I mean, they're out of the relegation zone as it is.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, they've just gone on this unbelievable run where, and at this sort of phase of the season, whatever division you're in, whether you're going for promotion or to avoid relegation, momentum is so important. We see this every single season. There are teams that come into form at the right time, they get a bit of confidence, and when you sort of group that up with teams they're playing against who aren't in form and who are nervous about relegation or nervous about going for a title or nervous about going for Europe, the confidence always seems to win out, unless you have done that. And it was really important for them to not get hammered by Chelsea, because that one game they got beaten in that run, they lost 3-1. I think they're at 1-1 with about 15 minutes left, and they gave a really good account of themselves. And that was important, because then Nigel Pearson could say to his players, OK, you've lost to the champions here. It's not the end of the world. You competed for large parts. We'll go back again next game. If they had got beaten 4 or 5-0, that would have been very, very difficult to bounce back from. But they managed that game very well. And that has been key to how they've carried on.
The ostrich. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. I know it's in the past. They get a victory, it's going to be salve for the wounds. But Pearson and his ostrich rant. What did you make of that? I mean, is this what kind of manager is he? Because that's again, it's sort of off the rails a little bit. But that may be good for a team who again is sort of scrapping and trying to get every point possible to stay up.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he's doing this on purpose to distract from his team's pressure. But I sort of think he might just be a bit of an idiot, and the way he acted was really, really bizarre. I mean, he's got previous for acting strangely anyway. I think he's under a lot of pressure in his defence. I think, you know, he had that thing earlier in the season where he wasn't sure if he was going to keep his job or not. Mm-hmm. And I think he probably feels a bit hard done by, because Leicester are doing well at the moment and maybe he doesn't feel like they're getting the credit. I don't agree with that, but I mean, if that's his point of view, and that's fair enough. I think the media have been very fair about on Leicester, really. But I think he got a bit carried away, overreached a little bit in terms of his analogies, which we've all done. And now he's being derided for it. But interestingly enough, ostriches don't even bury their heads.
Right.
Purported by a Disney cartoon back in the day.
I do think it's interesting that the world has, a lot of people have learned something about the nature of ostriches because Nigel Pearson went on his little rant. We all got a little...
Sorry, not all is not lost.
We got a little nature in our lives thanks to Nigel Pearson. Sunderland, QPR, and Burnley in the relegation spots right now. Things can change, obviously. You know, Hull, Newcastle, even Villa, not necessarily out of danger yet. Although, certainly Villa's turnaround has been pretty good. I mean, they beat Everton. And Everton's another one of those teams that's Jekyll and Hyde. They're not going anywhere necessarily. But where do you rate Everton and their season? Because it's been a difficult one that maybe they underachieved in. And then Aston Villa, again, a team that at one point was people were very afraid that they were going to go down, and they managed to turn things around under Tim Sherwood.
Yeah, Everton have had a difficult time. They had the Europa League, which always takes its toll. They had players injured at key times, key players as well. And they've sort of never really got going until, what was the game they won? I think they beat Newcastle, lucky old Newcastle, giving them a charity donation, as they've done to everyone, in the middle of about March. And then every game since then, they've played really well until the weekend when they got beaten by Aston Villa. But I think that's probably because Aston Villa knew what was at stake and were fighting for their lives, and Everton are sort of safely ensconced in mid-table now. It's not been a vintage season for Everton, but then they do this every so often. I mean, I can remember them finishing 17th with David Moyes. And the season after that, you're okay. So, I mean, it's the nature of the beast with Everton. They can be a bit inconsistent from season to season. Occasionally, now I know David Moyes overall did a good job, and Martinez has done a good job up until now. So, of course, they're one of those teams that aren't really going to trouble the leaders generally. But they are prone to the odd sort of season off the boil, which has happened this year. But they're okay. I mean, the table's fine. They'll kick on again next season with no Europa League to worry about. Aston Villa have had a new manager bounce, which you see quite a lot. Sherwood has done the thing that a lot of managers of his ilk do, which is basically instill confidence in his team. And with that, it's quite a simple equation. With confidence, they start off to score goals. I mean, they can hardly have scored fewer goals, but they have, in terms of them, their goal scoring has picked up. And that's been enough for them because there are so many poor teams down there. Mm. They deserve the credit. I mean, he's probably going to keep them safe just because QPR and Burnley are gone now. It's only one team of about five, so their chances of staying up are quite good.
The Premier League has things to settle, but we have a championship season completed, a League One season completed, so we know who's coming up and who's going down between those two divisions. Or at least we have two teams coming up for the championship, Bournemouth and Watford, and then you obviously have the playoffs. The Bournemouth story gets a lot of discussion. I've seen it kind of cut both ways, Luke, with the, okay, well, this is obviously a small team that had some, or a small club that had some financial difficulties and was nearly insolvent. And here they are about to go to the Premier League. It's a lovely thing. And then there's the discussion about, okay, what kind of money has come into the club? And is it the right kind of money? Is any of that of a concern to you?
I think Eddie Howe's done an amazing job. I mean, that's the first thing to say. I mean, he was manager of the club when they survived on the last day of the season of the Football League by beating, I think it was Grimsby on the last day of the season. And that wasn't actually that long ago. And now they're going to be in the Premier League. It's an amazing achievement. And he's a young manager. I think when he was managing them to keep them in the Football League, I think he was 31 years old. So the sort of perspective needs to be looked at here about how well he's done, because it doesn't need to take anything away from him. Of course they've been well funded, and of course he's been well supported. They haven't spent a huge amount of money on transfers, by the way. Right. It's not like they've done what some other teams have done in the past and just chucked a lot of money at it over and over again. It's been built on a decent, solid foundation of good, hard working players and decent football from a good young manager. The thing I like about Eddie Howe is he was highly rated. He did the job he did at Bournemouth the first time round. He was poached by Burnley. Didn't work out for him. Made a lot of mistakes there, by his own admission. Was far away from home. Didn't really enjoy it. Learned from those mistakes. Went back to Bournemouth, which a lot of people would say you should never go back. But he went back there and he's achieved even more. So he's clearly a very resilient character who works very hard. And he's earned his right to manage in the Premier League now. And of course they're going to find it difficult. Mm. They're going to find it hard to attract players down there, I think. But, I mean, these players like Matt Ritchie, who's really set that league on fire. As again, earned his right to play in the top flight, and good for him. And I think there'll be a breath of fresh air in the Premier League next season, and it'll be interesting to see how they get on.
Watford coming up with them, as I mentioned, in the playoffs: Norwich, Middlesbrough, Brentford, and Ipswich. You have a pick to come out of the playoffs, and if you don't have a pick, who would you like to see come up?
Oh, you sly little sausage! It's difficult to say. You're making me guess that. It's hard. I mean, Norwich under Alex Neil have done well. He's come in there, done a really good job. They're going to be disappointed finishing third, though, so that's always tough. Brentford, it would be an interesting story because Mark Warburton's going to go at the end of the season, whatever happens. If he delivers them Premier League football, then leaves, that'll be a ridiculous set of circumstances. Ipswich under Mick McCarthy has sort of drifted in there under the radar, and they play Norwich in the semi-final, so that'll be a really big game. Mm-hmm. And then Middlesbrough, again, will be really disappointed to miss out on Tomasic because they looked like they were going to do it for large parts of the season. It's really hard to say. I think the Norwich Ipswich semi-final will be really, really interesting. Maybe the winner of that can go on and get promotion. But we saw last season in the playoff final that it's so dramatic. I mean, that QPR went up with that goal and Derby were heartbroken was really sickening to see. This is a neutral for Derby because their hearts are broken. But it's always a really, really good affair, the playoffs, and I'll be interested to see what happens. I'll certainly be watching with interest. But it's hard for me to pick. Really hard.
Yeah, the championship playoffs are always brilliant. I'm very much looking forward to them. You have Millwall, Wigan, and Blackpool going down. Just in about 30 seconds here, what strikes me of that trio, not outside of Millwall and everybody's opinions on them, but Wigan going down to League One, you know, not too long ago being in the Premier League and winning an FA Cup title, and here they are dropping down to the third division. What's gone wrong at Wigan?
Oh, they've struggled to keep hold of managers. They've not really got any consistency. We saw against Brentford at the weekend. I mean, I know they've already been relegated effectively, but they've got absolutely battered against Brentford. They're not a huge club, really. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the controversial chairman, Dave Williams, stepped down earlier in the year. They're a small rugby league town, really. Yeah. They've been overachieving hugely with Bertrand Martinez there, who does a really good job. Obviously, delivered them the FA Cup and kept them in the Premier League. They really did a lot for that club. They chucked a lot of money at the club and the city as well, and got them punching way above their weight. But sadly, now they're drifting away. And when you come down from the Premier League and you lose your players, and then Championship is a real slog if you get into a bad spiral with results, and so it's come to pass. They've not been good enough really throughout the season. They've changed managers around as well. It's not really worked for them. I've not seen as much of them as some have, but and I have seen them. They've been poor. Mm. Blackpool, of course, were dead and buried for a number of different reasons. And what's going on at that club is obviously an absolute disgrace. And Millwall haven't really recovered since Kenny Jackett left. So those teams, it's difficult for them. But I support a team in League Two, and I know what it's like to be relegated and relegated and relegated again. So I stand firm and in solidarity with my other lower league team supporting brothers.
Does that include MK Dons fans? They are celebrating. If they exist, I always get the sense they don't exist. There have to be some to fill out that new stadium. They're going to be moving up to the Championship next year.
Yes, they are, and I personally don't have an awful lot of track with that. Of course, I understand them now these days because they've been a club for a while. There are young people coming up in that town looking for their local team to support and aren't fully aware of the history. But generally, you won't get me endorsing MK Dons in any way, shape, or form, I don't think.
Is there any discussion about whether or not this is overall good for English football, bad for English football? Does it have any real impact that, you know, that this is Franchise FC moving up to the second division? And you know, a couple of breaks go their way. They spend a little bit of money. Again, they have a bright new stadium. They could be a Premier League team before we know it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not really for me to say whether it's good or bad for the game in general. That's probably a bit of an overthinking of it. I just feel that it's not really a situation that I found that palatable when it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that comfortable with wanting to be well. But it's a difficult one because I like football in general. I'm more of an overall football fan rather than a keen supporter of one particular club. And obviously, I support Portsmouth, but I'm more of a football fan in general. And so I understand that when a bunch of kids come up and want to support their local team, and I can certainly empathise with that. But the nature of the way it happened was left a bitter taste in the mouth for every football fan, really. And what happened at Wimbledon was an absolute disgrace. It was awful, really was awful. And my sympathies overall lie with Wimbledon, really, rather than the young people of MK Dons. But, you know, they're there on merit. The league has sanctioned them to play. They're winning games. They've got a good young manager. So, you know, there are more than two sides to every story in this case.
Yeah, well, yes. If anybody is not aware of the history of MK Dons, where they come from, and what happened to Wimbledon, you should go back and research that a little bit. I'm sure there's a lovely Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I don't want to bore everyone to death with that.
Luke Moore from the World Famous Football Ramble talking English football. It's great to have you back, Luke. Appreciate your time, and perhaps we'll have you back soon.
You're a gentleman, Jason. Thank you very much, and I would love to come back on.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, get you talking about whatever is on your mind, whether it's MK Dons or MLS or, I don't know, Liga MX, whatever's happening. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Be right back.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Back on Soccer Morning, taking your phone calls 646-832-3909 is the phone number. Jump on in. Couple of questions for you here on a Monday. I like talking about what the best goal of the weekend is. I always like that. Very much into Clint Dempsey setting up with Emi Martins. You had Jovinko with his long-range free kick. You had a great team goal from New England with Teal Bunbury finishing it off. I'm missing goals. I know I am. I'm missing good goals. Obviously, Fabian Castillo and what FC Dallas did to Houston, just taking them apart. Some fantastic stuff happening in MLS. We can talk about that. I feel as though perhaps everybody wants to talk about hair, though. Like, is hair the number one topic because of Benny Failhaber? By the way, Benny Failhaber on Sirius XM FC 94 coming up this coming up today. Debut show for Soccer Morning over there. And we will have Benny Failhaber. And damn right I'm going to ask him about his hair. Damn right I'm going to ask him about his hair. Now, I think that the hair thing in soccer is one of the more fun elements. Now, you don't have to like what Benny Failhaber did to his hair. You could say it's an ugly hairstyle if you want to do that. We've got some mullets in this league. Not a lot of them. Tommy McNamara, who can't seem to get on the field for New York City FC, has a mullet. I'm trying to think of some other hairs. I mean, obviously, Jesse Zardes gets a lot of attention because of his blonde hair that he dyes so his grandma can see him when she watches his games on television. Who else is in the top five? I don't even mean like necessarily good or bad, making a value judgment on the quality, the aesthetic quality of the hair. I mean, who's in the top five for just the most out there hair, the most interesting hair in MLS? Who's the kid that New York has that used to play for RSL? I'm blanking on his name. I have to think about that. Let's go to Pierce. What's up, Pierce?
Hey, Jason. I just had a quick question. I've always seen DC United play in one game, so I was just wondering, and I'm sure you're up there, so are they really good, or are they just on a hot...
I love this. I love trying to figure out whether or not DC United is a really good team or not. And I saw a quote, our friend Thomas... why am I blanking on Thomas's name, Trevor? Thomas Floyd. God. Our friend Thomas Floyd from backheel.com and goal.com over there at Open Wife for some soccer had a quote from Ben Olsen after the game. And they said, you know, hey, Ben, how are you guys winning these games? And Ben Olsen said, oh, it's luck. Don't you read? Everybody says it's just luck. Now, he was being sarcastic. It's not luck. They are a good team. They are not an exciting team in the sense of what Seattle does or what New England does or even what Columbus does. They are a quality, disciplined team with a couple of game changers, an ability to hit you on the counter and on set pieces, and they play defensively sound soccer. So I think they're good, Pierce. I don't know that they're great, if you know what I mean.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Is that it? That's all you got?
Yeah.
All right, man.
Yeah,
thanks a lot. All right, there goes Pierce. Talking about DC United, again, I think DC United is an enigma, but in a good way. In a good way. I think Benny Olsen is a very smart coach. Now, they went through that absolutely disastrous season in 2013. It was the worst. Then they flipped it around, and I think everybody thought, okay, well, they got some allocation help. They got into the Champions League. They obviously finished last last in 2013, and that brings in a league that's designed to promote parity, that brings with it some sort of help on that end. And yeah, you can turn it around. They sort of grinded out results and you weren't really sure how good they actually were. And it's continued. And all they're doing is getting results. And I'm sure DC United fans don't care. Maybe you, DC United fans out there, let me know. 646-832-3909. Do you care if anybody thinks your team is good as long as the wins are coming? They beat Columbus, a good team, in my mind, 2-0 at RFK this weekend. Chris Rolfe is on fire. Fabian Espíndola makes that a different, more dangerous team. They've obviously got Perry Kitchen, who is rounding into one of the best defensive midfielders in MLS. They've got some defensive stability. Now, they've had to rotate out some guys. But you got Bobby Boswell back there, former MLS Defender of the Year. You've got quality in that MLS, in that DC United team. That's helping them be solid all the way throughout, because you look around the league and there are so many teams that they have a great attacking trio or a couple of good players up front that can score some goals, but their defensive is lacking. That's a little bit Toronto's problem, right? Or you look at, you know, even a team like New England, who has a lot of talent. You look at that back line, you go, is it really going to hold up for the whole year? London Woodbury came out of nowhere, is now apparently their right back of choice, and is making great contributions. Is he going to be solid throughout the season? Do we know what to expect from him? You look at Seattle. They've had to play Brad Evans at center back because of their issues there. But they have Dempsey and Martins, and they have Nagel, and they have Papa, and they have Alonso. Is there a team that's... I'm not saying the DC United is the most complete team in the league, but I'm saying they are above average in nearly every part of the field, in every facet of the game. They're willing to get dirty. They certainly take on the the character of their coach in that regard, and that gets you some benefit in MLS. It's still a league that doesn't come down hard enough on some of the off the ball stuff, some of the nonsense that happens, some of the tackles that are flying around. Guys are staying on the field when they shouldn't, and DeShannon knows how to exploit that. Washington, what's going on, man?
What's up, Jason? Damn Seattle with Dempsey and Martin combo. I hate them all.
By the way, is the bloom off the rose yet? I know it's not for you. You're going to support the team. But I imagine.
Right. No, the bloom is not off the rose. It's never going to be off the rose
okay,
for me.
Okay, for you. But I mean for the fan base, for the people of New York who maybe aren't like you. They didn't buy all the way in. They didn't push all their chips to the middle on this team. They're sort of like, okay, this is a soccer team playing at New York, at a Yankee Stadium, and they've got David Villa, and they've got Mixed Disc Group, speaking of good hair. And we'll go out and check it out. And Jason Kreis, after that game, says, I didn't think it would be this hard. Wow, really? Like, I'm surprised at that, Washington.
I did not know that comment. That's surprising to me, too. You kind of just hit me in the gut with that one. But let me tell you, I was at Yankee Stadium last night, and I was in right behind the goal, not in the supporter section, but on the other side. And we had a pretty good crowd, and all of us to the man were like, you know, we'll get them next time. We still have that attitude. I don't think it's at the point where, oh, man, I'm done. And, you know, for a lot of us that were there, it really didn't seem that we'd ever get to that point that, oh, I'm done. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part. I don't know. Because, like I said, for me, it'll never be done. But
I understand.
The attitude that I got last night was, you know, we're there to, you know, we're here for the long haul.
No, and that's the look, if you're a fan and you're committed and you buy in and you are going to call yourself a fan or a supporter, you need to be there no matter what, the ups and downs, everything else. I just wonder for the casuals, and this is a league that still desperately needs the casuals for all the supporters culture and diehards we have now, whether or not those people are going to still be on board. And I heard there was some that you guys were getting serenaded by the traveling Seattle support.
Yeah. What supporters? Were they even there? I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, what were the songs? I heard there was maybe Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
It was Take Me Out to the Ball Game. I think they tried to do a rendition of New York, New York and change it up a little bit. But I was really trying to tune them out. I really was trying to tune them out.
All right, so are you just going to hold on for dear life until Frank Lampard shows up? Until David Villa is healthy?
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to bring that up because we were talking about that on the stands. And many people were like, oh, man, Frank's coming in July. Frank's coming in July. I don't know. First of all, do you think that he's like the Messiah? Do you think he's the Savior? Do you think he's going to change it around?
I think he does. He's the Savior, but I think he changes things pretty significantly for New York. I think that if you can find a way to for Disc Root and Lampard to have a balance and an understanding, the guy's going to get, you know, he can get 5-6 goals down the stretch. He can be the guy that finds him.
I'm stuck at a point where I'm. You know how I feel about Frank right now? He's like the pretty girl that you asked for the prom, and then she initially said yes, but then somebody better looking asked her, and then she turned you down after the. So I'm pissed off at him pretty much right now.
Okay.
I am. All right. And now I have to begrudgingly kind of say, okay, Frank, come and help me out here. And I'm not sure how I sit with that. I mean, if you don't want CFC, I'm going to support him no matter what.
Wait, Washington. What you're telling me is that you feel dirty about this a little bit because of the whole saga with whether he was signed or not signed and the loan or not. Now you feel dirty.
I do.
Because you need him to come in and help you out.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. This is an expansion year, Wash. I know you know this, intellectually.
Yeah, and I got to swallow it. I know. Yeah. I got to swallow it. I know. And we were talking about that yesterday, too. You know, there's certain things that we're just going to have to, you know, take in stride because we want this to be a success. And if we have to take Frank's out to be a success,
this is a team that's not going to hesitate to bring in reinforcements if they can, if they have the cap room, if they, you know, right now you have. One DP slot filled with Frank coming. Yeah. That'll be two. There's going to be room for somebody else if they want to add somebody. What I want to see Kreis do is give some of these younger guys an opportunity. I know that there's got to be some sort of spine. There's going to be some sort of stability. You're going to lean on guys like Grabovoi, etc. But, you know, as long as you're in an expansion year and you're sort of waiting on your team being filled out because the summer is going to change things significantly, then why not give Poku more time? Why not give Velasquez a chance? That's the name I couldn't remember earlier, by the way. Why not give some of these guys who, you know,
have... And one of the things I have hope for is we do have young guys. We have Shelton. We have Mix. We have Velasquez. We have Hernandez. You know, we do have young guys that are you know, they're going to get, you know, they're green now, but they're going to get better. And I have faith that we are going to turn this around.
All right. Well, that's good to hear, Washington. I appreciate it, man.
Take care, man.
There goes Washington, shirt number 5, Washington in New York. That's right. We're going to have shirt numbers for the long-time guys, the consistent guys. You bring the quality here, show in and show out, or, you know, you're regularly, you're on the show regularly calling in, and you add to the discussion, I'll definitely consider giving you a shirt. I think we've given out 3 or 4 at this point. 646-832-3909. Just a couple of minutes left in the show. Just to keep you aware, with the SiriusXM show starting up today, 11 a.m. Eastern, SiriusXM FC94. Things are going to be a little tighter on the web show. If you haven't noticed, we've cut it down to one guest. We had Luke Moore today. That gives you guys more opportunity to get in with your calls if you want to on the web show in the morning. We moved it back an hour. We've dropped a guest. We're trying to tighten things up a little bit so that we have time to get ready for the SiriusXM show at 11 a.m., but we don't want to short you. So if you want to get in, now's the time, 646-832-3909. Jonathan Tannenwald on Twitter saying, Washington's on Soccer Morning right now. I think we need him and Eddie from Brooklyn on the air together on Friday show ahead of Red Bull New York NYCFC. That gives me an idea. We'll have to explore that. That's a brilliant idea. We definitely need to explore maybe a supporter showdown segment on this program. If you are trying to call in through the old Skype number, unfortunately, I'm going to ignore you. So just that's a word to the wise for anybody who's got the old Skype number and is trying to call that way. You got to call 646-832-3909 instead of what we used to use, because this allows us to have this calls go through producer Trevor. I know who you are, where you're from, and what you're talking about. And that helps me out a lot. And it's good practice for the Sirius show, which again is to, should I be nervous? I don't know if I am nervous or I'm convincing myself I'm not nervous, but I am nervous, but I'm not nervous. Like, I don't know how to feel about that. If you guys want to just call in and boost me up a little bit, I might help. Trevor says, no need to be nervous, just don't F it up. Oh, that's fantastic support. Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate that. I appreciate that. 646-832-3909. Couple minutes left in the web show. We've had a good one. The MLS season getting a little interesting. Premier League season not over yet. Got a couple games left, but Chelsea is your champion. Considering that you have a couple of games left in the Premier League season, we don't yet know who's going down. We do know who's coming up. At least two of those teams that are coming up. And as I said with Luke Moore, I love MLS. I will watch it no matter what. We haven't talked about the roster rules, by the way. We're going to cover some of that on SiriusXM FC. So make sure you listen to that. Kyle McCarthy will be joining us. He's a big rules guy. He knows, he's a lawyer. He's got a head for it. We're going to talk to him about all of that stuff. The salary cap, whether that's moving fast enough, everything else. And I love MLS and I love the MLS playoffs. I think the format could be tweaked to make it a little bit better. But the championship playoffs, the promotion playoffs in the championship are absolutely fantastic. They are amazing to watch. And we've had some serious, serious drama come out of that league the last couple of years as teams desperately try to get back into the Premier League. Most of those teams are trying to get back. Some of those teams have never been, and it's a big deal for them. And even if you're setting yourself up to come right back down, to be in the Premier League even for a season, and now with that television contract, that's potentially history-changing type of money that these teams might be grabbing by moving up. Amazing stuff happens in the promotion playoffs. I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. We got an FA Cup final coming up, not too distant future. We obviously have the Champions League still going on. Have we really outlined the focus of the Sirius show yet, Trevor? Just to give people a sense. We're gonna be heavily American focused over there. We're gonna be mostly MLS, NASL, USL. We'll tie some things into Americans abroad. We'll talk national team if there's an angle, if a storyline comes up that happened somewhere else and we can tie it into the American discussion, I'll certainly do that. Obviously, you know, the Premier League is popular in the United States, and therefore there's an American angle to the discussion of the Premier League. But as we've seen sort of the drop-off of the number of players over there, we don't quite have as much reason to talk about it in a purely American context, which I think is interesting. I don't know if we're going to see another influx or if MLS has turned the tide by bringing back some more American players. Doug Garber spoke to this. He said, we're going to keep going after these guys. We're not going to stop. Now, he was also taking a shot at Jurgen Klinsmann because apparently that's just what Don does these days. And I think that's the right direction for the league. But it also means, again, we're going to see less of an influence in Europe. And there are a couple of people I want to get on this show sort of talk about that dynamic. One is Breck Shea. And if you haven't read Leander Shalatkin's piece on Breck Shea, I think that's a Soccer Gods piece, soccergods.com. If you haven't read his piece, his profile piece on Breck Shea, as soon as this show is over, go do that and then join us for SiriusXM FC. It's a fantastic look behind the scenes at Breck Shea's life and what kind of person he is. And maybe the disconnect between why he didn't work in England, essentially. The disconnect between the on all the time 24/7 soccer player that maybe European football demands, certainly Jurgen Klinsmann wants to see, and what Breck Shea the person actually is. He says he wants his downtime. He doesn't want to be thinking about soccer all the time. It's his job. And while I think that is a healthy perspective, it may be the thing that holds some players back. I mean, that's got to be true. And it may be the thing that holds America back, the United States back, the national team back. And it may be why Jurgen Klinsmann likes himself some European players, dual internationals. The American mentality doesn't provide for the sort of commitment that he wants to see. And then we as fans have to make a decision about whether we care that our players like a work-life balance. Landon Donovan's a perfect example of this. The man didn't want to be soccer, 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 soccer. He wanted to have a life. That probably held him back. As great as he was, and as much as he did for MLS and the U.S. men's national team, people will still hold it over his head. He could have been great if only he was more committed. If only he wasn't soft, which I think is a terrible word, a loaded word that doesn't apply necessarily to these guys. And I also think it's easy to throw stones, but hey, we also want our teams to win. We absolutely want our teams to win. The other guy I want on this show is Alejandro Bedoya. We've had him on the program before. We got to bring him back. If you're not following Alejandro Bedoya on Twitter, do that, please. Not only is he an American player in Europe, having success at Nantes in France, he is also one of the best sources for commentary on the state of MLS and American soccer on Twitter. And whether or not you agree with him or not, he's got opinions. He's out there in front of things, talking about the way the league operates. And I've talked to him before, and he's flat out said he's not coming back as long as that allocation system is in place and he can't pick his team. And I think we, again, whether or not you agree with his opinions, we need more people sort of challenging these elements of the league that could prevent further growth, among the other things that can prevent further growth. All right. Calls have slowed down. Getting ready to wrap this one up. Got to move over. SiriusXM FC 94, 11 a.m. Eastern. Please join us over there. Got a great, great lineup. Jesse Marsh, Kyle McCarthy, Benny Failhaber, Alex Morgan. Just slamming it out of the park on the first day to mix my metaphors here. Make sure you go to backheel.com/store. Buy yourself a Soccer Morning mug. You can support the show that way. It's very pretty. It's got our beautiful logo as designed by Dan at 3NLFC.com. By the way, 3NLFC.com is where you buy a t-shirt. A pretty blue Soccer Morning t-shirt. Also with the logo. Hit us up on Twitter with your photos of you out in the wild with that shirt on, whether it's a soccer match of any kind. Any context. I don't care. Send me pictures. I love seeing it. What else, Trev? What am I missing, man? Something else. There's something else I'm missing, I'm sure. I feel like I'm always like leaving things on the table here when we get done. SiriusXM FC 94, 11 a.m. Eastern. That's it. All right. We will talk to you guys tomorrow on the web show, 9 o'clock Eastern. Remember, a new time. If you're a podcast listener, your life has not changed one bit. Not really. And you get the Sirius show if you want to join over there. So do that. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow on this show. I'll talk to you in about an hour at Sirius XM FC.